not happen for an age.
What's that?
Tis a gathering.
Hello and welcome to Entmoot. It's the slow grow time. This is the, I think, the third slow grow I've done on the podcast. I think it must have been the first one I organised, then there's the second one a couple of years ago, and then because of COVID and things like that. And then now we're back into the third slow grow. So this is, we're slowly building armies over a period of months at my local club, Imps Gaming. And this will form episode 89... which is this episode, and also another episode at some point, maybe not next episode, but a couple of episodes time. I don't know exactly, but we're going to have fun on this one. It's going to be relatively concise and compact, even though I've spent 40 seconds already talking about nothing other than the fact that it's a slow grow, which most people understand. But if you've never heard the podcast before, I will be building an army, be running through my army list and taking it along to some games and interviewing my opponents about their armies and what happened in the game. So consider it chunks of battle report scattered throughout the podcast in a variety of audio ways. It's all very exciting. Don't you worry about it. But in order to do those things, we've got to build some armies. And this time, because it's a slow go, I'll be building three separate armies of a variety of different points. So we'll get into the building of the armies later on, just to juggle things around a bit for those regular listeners. So this time we're going to juggle things around. We're going to do the army building second, shock horror, and then we're going to start with this thing, which is...
Questions that need answering.
That's right, it's questions that need answering. And last time it was all about frequently asked questions that need answering. And it was the update, the errata update of February. I mentioned about mainly about the Dragon Emperor being given an extra 30 points to add on to the total. And I sort of, I cast it out there to see whether people thought it hit the mark, whether there were other things that needed to be touched on in the FAQ. And I think, to be honest... we've been around the houses. I think everyone who is listens to podcasts or this sort of content has probably heard enough about the FAQ by now. So I'll try and keep this relatively concise, this segment. But I thought it was, there were some interesting nuggets that came in on the email. So let's crack on with said emails. First of all, we've got Evan who got in touch. I don't think it's Evan Iverson from the Unexpected podcast. I believe it's another Evan, but he's called himself Axes of the Dwarves on his email. So I have no idea. But it is an Evan. Anyway, hi Evan. He says, I have some thoughts about the Dragon Emperor points change and also about point efficient heroes in general. For starters, I agree with your assessment. Thank you very much, Evan. A 30 point increase is probably not enough to properly nerf the Dragon Emperor, though I'm honestly not sure he needed a nerf. Controversial opinion coming your way from Evan. Here we go. He says, I'd agree with anyone who said he was very points efficient and probably still is, but I do think the Easterlings needed something to give them a competitive advantage. I've played with the host of the Dragon Emperor quite a bit since it's released, but never actually against it. And here, there you go. That's the reason why Evan says, I'm honestly not sure he needed a nerf. He's never played against the Dragon Emperor. All right, you just used him. Fair enough. All right, I've played with the blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so I'm of the opinion that he was. It's not as oppressive as people made it out to be. I will chip in here as Harry and say it's probably a little bit boring to play against, though. And he continues, though, says, I definitely think it's good, but still very beatable. Easy for you to say. I agree with your point about maybe dropping the free Black Dragon upgrade from the Legion would have been a good balance call. Possible even in addition to... Sorry, possibly even in addition to the Emperor's points increase. Interesting. I would have liked to see a flat change to the cost of the Black Dragon upgrade when Defence of the North was released, rather than free upgrades in the Legion. I think that makes sense. Changing the cost from 2 to 1 point would have been a much better move, in my opinion. Yeah, I think the problem with that was that it would be a 1 point for two things, so you just never see any normal Easterlings, right? Because you get a Courage buff and a Fight Value buff. So I just don't think they would have ever done that. Making it free is silly, I still think, but hey, that's just me. So he goes on and sort of says, I want to point out about cost-effective heroes in general. I think it's a real shame the majority of the cost-effective or best models in the game are often GW inventions. All the Easterling heroes, Gullivar, Suladan, Kardush come into mind as some, but I'm sure there are others. It's one of my least favourite aspects of MESBG, honestly. Now, this is a good point, and it's historically been criticised, hasn't it? Things like the shade were overpowered, or certainly considered overpowered for a long time. That was a GW invention. Black Numenoreans, I mean, I know they exist kind of in the lore, but they're a very strong model, aren't they? So are they Tolkien-esque? I guess, but we never see them in fight. So inventing something that wasn't sort of written in the books that you sort of had a contest against, then I don't know. Is it fair? I don't know. Maybe I'm just waffling here. But it's a good point. Anyway, I'll go back to Evan's thoughts. He says, using just Defence of the North as an example, compare Retaby and King Brand, who are the same points cost. They have almost identical stat lines, but Retaby gains fight 6, trades a point of will for an extra point of fate, but the amount and quality of her special rules far exceeds what Brand has. I'll concede Brand is a hero of legend, and he does offer Sworn Protector in his Legendary Legion, but I still think Retaby is a clear winner for points efficiency. That's a good comparison, like that. As I said before, I do think the Eastlings needed some cost-effective heroes, and I think Retaby's a cool profile, but I find it sad an actual Tolkien character, however minor he may be, is just all right for his points in comparison to something GW invented. On a separate note, I'd like to hear your thoughts on whether there should be more erratas that bring models, armies, and Legendary Legion up to a more competitive level rather than just nerfing stuff that performs too highly. For example, Riders of Airmare and Men of the West are legendary legions based on some of the most iconic scenes in the films, and yet neither of them are highly rated from a competitive standpoint. I'd personally like to see some changes to buff these armies and make them more viable. Thoughts? Question mark. I think it's a fair point. I know it's difficult though, isn't it? Because I think the reason for FAQs and erratas is purely to stop that negative game experience of everyone bringing along the Dragon Emperor Legion and, I don't know, whatever, which is dominating top tables. If you want to play a fun army like Riders of Aemir or Men of the West, play a fun army. Just play it. Just use the army. There's nothing stopping you. Like, it doesn't have to be a competitive army for you to use it. It's just that nerfing the top armies creates a bit more of a sort of mash, doesn't it? A mixture, which I'm very much in favour of. I'm not against people them upping the value of some of those Riders of Aemir or Men of the West things, but you don't, if you want to recreate the Men of the West, recreate the Men of the West using the Legendary Legion if you want to use it. You don't also have to win the games. So it's a bit of a toss-up, isn't it? I understand that, you know, some people want both, but you can't always have both. So there you go. But I like your point. I get it. That makes sense. So there you go. So next, Alex from... Oh, and yeah. Yeah, okay. I'll sort of cover that. Next, Alex from Calgary's made some points. I'll skip a lot of what he says at the start because he largely agrees with Evan about the Dragon Emperor. So I'll skip to him saying, the change I think would be interesting is limiting black dragons to 33% of a warband, similar to bow limits. The lore behind them that I've read is that they're the elite Easterling warriors and being able to mass them out isn't in line with that. So that I'll stop there before I move on to the next thing. Great point. I think that's true. I think that's completely right. What would have happened if you'd have taken away the points buff or the free Black Dragon upgrade, I think what would have happened is people would have returned to a pike at the front, an Elisling pike behind him, and a Black Dragon pike at the back. Because that's the way they were usually done. You put your fight 4, courage 4 at the back. And then it means that they don't really gain as much from the courage 4 for charging terrifying stuff. So there is a weakness, or more of a weakness. I think that would have been brilliant. The 33% thing, great, fine. I don't disagree with it. It's not a bad idea. But I think it's also solved by the increasing the points value taking away the benefit of the 2-point upgrade. Interesting point, though. I like that. It's a different way of going about the same thing, I suspect, but I like it. The other change I think they could have done is again to the Legendary Legion by removing cataphracts from the Legendary Legion. This is a great idea. The lore of the Host of the Dragon Emperor is the assault on Erebor against Erebor Reclaimed and Army of Dale. When you're assaulting a mountain stronghold, cavalry is completely useless. Why they are able to take cavalry seemingly does not fit the lore behind the Legendary Legion. And you absolutely hit the nail on the head here, don't you? That's a really good thematic way of restricting the Legion, because one of the great things about the Legion is the drum. And the drum can only be on a cataphract. So if you lose the mobility, you're not having these ridiculously high fight value dudes marching across the table, double, you know, for free, and not actually having to do anything, and having cataphracts skirting around the edges that are fight five as well. I actually think that's a really, really good change. The only sort of criticism I might have of it is that I suppose it makes sense for them to have drums attacking a city. But if you can only have, if cataphracts are the only people who can carry drums, great, axe it. Love it. Great idea. Thank you very much, Alex, for that. You did have a bit more talking about the main topic of those who dodged the FAQ, which he thinks is all about Black Numenoreans. So this is going back to efficiency, cost-effective heroes. He says Black Numenoreans are just insane points efficiency, he says. He says he's yet to see a competitive Corsair army that doesn't have 8 to 12 Black Numenoreans alongside 33% Arbalasters. I have. I think the Corsairs work better when they're a horde of backstabbing dudes, but maybe I'm wrong. Now, how would you change that then? I'm not sure. Points is the easy change. Maybe a restriction like one listed above. I'm not sure, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Personally, I don't think Black Numenoreans are a problem in Corsairs. I'm not convinced they're that much of a big issue. They're probably... maybe they are a point. I just think if you put a point on them, is it going to do a lot? How many points do you have to put on them to see them severely restricted? There's a real fine balance here between going... That's, I don't know how much they are, 8 points, 9 points, something like that. If you whack them at 9, they might still be... Say they're 8, I can't remember. If they're 8 points now, you put them up to 9, I think that's probably still fine and people would still use them, and over the course of battle line, you might lose one or two models. Well, one. You put them up to 10, and I just don't think... Would people use them? Would you use them very much? I don't know. Might you see more Morgul Stalkers kicking about? I don't know. It's really tricky. This is why I don't really like this sort of stuff. The best way of doing it... Just take the models off the website and just delete them, which they've done. So it's fine. Anyway, there you go. I like that idea. He continues and says, change he loved in the FAQ was the fog of war objective selection after timing change. I love that. It happens after deployment now. Totally agree. Final thoughts about Witch King Sully. Now they've become around. Oh, yeah. And how they've been around forever and now only just now become a menace. He says it's to do with the meta being solved. Alex goes into a bit more detail about this, but... Essentially, he says the lack of releases means people gravitate to competitive armies and all models, which I kind of think is probably true. So cheers from Calgary in Canada, Alex. Excellent work, Alex. Thanks very much for getting in touch. And I think I largely agree with a lot of what you've said. But I'm not 100% sure that the Numenoreans are the issue. I think it's... Oh, I don't know. Maybe it is. I think it's the combination. In the Mordor army, you just have a few things you can choose from that are really good. So you've got... You know, you've got Suladan, who's just a good price for a 6-inch banner, a fight five hero of legend. So he can, you know, all those things. The Witch King's really good. You can sort of he can scale up and down to any points level. He's great for that. And again, great caster, a terror buff, all those sorts of things. And then the Numenoreans are good value as well. And then the Morannans are good value. So that is just in an army as big as Mordor, it makes sense. But I just wish that I think part of me thinks. Mordor, I think, needs, I don't know, there's, I want to see the Pelennor Fields army more, and that's not as good as just the pure Mordor alliance with stuff. So, but then, who cares? Like, if as I've said earlier in the podcast, if you want to see the Morannan Orc Horde, take the Morannan Orc Horde. Maybe I'm just being fussy, and maybe if I want to see those sorts of things more, I should go to less competitive tournaments. But, I don't know. Maybe this is the one of those bridges where I'm starting to think maybe I should go to those tournaments so I can see more fun stuff. Although I did see, I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, but we mentioned Heroes of the West earlier. That had some real success at a tournament. I think it was just a sort of fluffier tournament or an 80-pointer tournament in somewhere down south. And someone who'd been running the Heroes of the West, I can't remember your name, so apologies, shout out to whoever you are, managed to win a tournament with the Heroes of the West after having played with them like obsessively for a very long time. It just shows sometimes it's skill, not the army, that can win some stuff. So excellent. Thank you so much. Anyway, Alex, for getting in touch, and well done to whoever was that Hero of the West thing that I've just sort of got a bit distracted by. Right, finally, we've got three emails here, so I'll keep it light. Hi, Harry. Sorry, this is from Chuck. Chuck Sadler, you're saying you're right on the money with your observations about the Dragon Emperor. 30 points is an okay nerf, but doesn't fix any of the issues with that legion, especially at higher points. In the case of a Witch King Suladan, I wish GW would be a bit more heavy-handed with some of the internal balance issues within Mordor. I've only been back in the game since fall of 2022, and during that time I feel I've seen the game gaining in popularity, which might also have led to an increase in competitiveness among the player base. Point increases are a tricky way to tackle the way meta can stick on certain legendary legions or army builds. Are people going to stop taking the Dragon Emperor at 200? I don't think so. What points level would they stop taking him? 220? 240? 280? I'm not sure you can fix the way Witch King and Suladan are so points effective without also taking a look at some of their rules. You would need to add a lot of points to either of those models before people decided to try other things. Tweaking rules is a lot more heavy-handed that GW... Wait, hold on, this word sentence doesn't make much sense. Tweaking rules is a lot more heavy-handed that... Oh, it must be than GW seems to be with the FAQ, so I'm not sure we'll see any significant changes to the Witch King or Suladan. It will be interesting, though, to see how the meta shifts and moves about during 2024 and if anything can shake down that dominating list. Thanks for the great podcast and looking forward to hearing more. Cheers, Chuck. Also, PS, he says that Bjorn Grinch was inspired. I loved your Christmas movie themed A Hero Army you took in December. Well done. Thank you very much. Yeah, I was quite impressed with my... a lot of people have been impressed by my Grinch, Bjorn Grinch. It must be noted, Chris Murphy did it first. He's a Scottish player. Excellent, lovely man. I believe he was the most sporting player in the whole of the Great British Hobbit League last year. So he's a lovely guy and also came up with a great idea with his fluffy bears, which I stole. So there you go. Interesting, you've got some good points. I think you sort of summarised a lot of the stuff together. Would putting the points up stop people taking the Dragon Emperor? Well, I can give you a guaranteed answer. No, it hasn't, because at the grand tournament at Warhammer World, which was hosted just a week or so ago while I'm recording this podcast, the winner of said tournament was Callum Edens, who admittedly is a very accomplished player. He's been around for quite some time and he's done very well over the years. I believe... Was he second at Ardicon a few years back? So, I mean, he's able to... I think he's sort of keeping himself largely to the south these days. He used to travel quite a lot around the GBHL, but he largely pops up at tournaments in the south these days. But he popped up to the Warhammer World GT and took the Emperor, which was newly nerfed, and managed to win. And not just win, but win against some big names in the community, including Jay Clare, rules writer, and Ed Ball. So no soft games for him. Well, some soft games, I'd imagine, at the start, but certainly not an easy ride to the top spot. So interesting there. So clearly the Emperor in the right hands can still perform admirably. So there you go. That was interesting. So, I think all of this... all in all, after 15 minutes of ranting, I think... What do I think? Do I think the FAQ was good? I think it certainly did something that was right. I just think it needed to do more of said thing or in a slightly different way. But I don't know. I really don't know. I think, and I think maybe this is a... I think the simple thing for Games Workshop to do and the Middle-earth team to do to solve the problem like the Dragon Emperor or Witch King Suladan meta thing is to just go and create something interesting that is good and ideally Tolkien lore-ish. Riders of Theoden, for example, good from the lore and also competitive. So maybe that's the way forward. When the bears came in, they were good. Maybe not, but that's the problem. They seem to just... They're not quite right first time, which is always a shame. That's why the FAQ is needed. Anyway, enough rambling, because we've delved into the inbox for quite enough time now, rattling on for 15 minutes. So, let's build a slow-grow army.
Ask Oriok, build me a army worthy of Mordor.
All right, then. We're building armies... For not for Mordor, but for the fiefdoms. The fiefdoms. Very excited about this one. So I've been running fiefdoms a little bit so far, and hopefully you don't get tired of them. The next event I will be running The next event I'll be attending won't be fiefdoms. Ooh, what will I be using? Will it be small? Yes, it might be small. Or will it be large? Will it be a really massive army?
Or will it be small?
Or will it be... I don't know yet. We haven't settled just yet, but the next episode I'll be using either a small army or a massive army. I need to sort of settle on those things. I'm doing what I'm very excited about is a Yorkshire versus Lincolnshire event, which is ace. So we're very excited. We've got some locals against some Yorkshire louts defending the honour of tea, and we'll be defending the honour of Lincolnshire sausages. So that's exciting. So that's coming up soon. But in the meantime, we are slowly growing an army dedicated to the fiefdom. So here we go. First point. Oh, so I should give you some vague outline of the tournament or the league. The league starts at 400. It goes up to 500, then 600, then 700, then 800 points. And it's all pretty straightforward, but there's some veto. There's some vetoes in here. Now, I think I want to talk about this in the next episode in full, but I'll deal with this veto stuff at the end, all right? But there's a veto in process. It's a random roll, and then there's the veto, okay? Random from the whole pot, I believe. And then we'll be vetoing scenarios. So let's talk about that in a bit. In the meantime, let's build an army of 400 points. And that is Imrahil on a horse with a lance. Four men-at-arms of Dol Amroth, the ones with the pikes, and they gain the +1 fight value near Imrahil, who has a 12-inch banner. Then there's a knight of Dol Amroth on foot. Then there's a clansman of Dol Amroth, no, of Lamadon, for 8 points. That's the full first warband, so that's just 6 models. Don't know why I've done it like that, but anyway. Then we've got Forlong on horse. I've decided he's the man to go for. I thought at one point captains and stuff, but no. Forlong, ace. Horn, ace. Lance, ace. Defence, not ace, but strength 5, yeah. Like that. And plenty of wounds. The extra wound is actually a lot better. You forget about a captain person being 3 wounds and one fate is actually quite resilient at defence 6, so it's not bad. He's not died often. We'll see. Anyway, so Forlong on horse. He comes in at 90 points with his horse. Men-at-arms of Dol Amroth, 5 of them, still going heavy on the pikes. So 9 in total in this army so far. Then we've got a clansman, so a second clansman. 2 knights of Dol Amroth on foot. So that's 3 knights of Dol Amroth in total on foot. And 1 mounted knight of Dol Amroth with a lance and stuff. Armoured horse, all the gubbins. That's 17 models at 400 points. So this is... Now, I think what happened here, I don't think this is exactly how we'd normally build this force, especially because of the imbalance of the two warbands, the 6 in Imrahil and 9 in the other. What happened was I thought the first round, the first game of the slow grow was 500 or something like that, or 600, and then went to it, attended game, Got the stuff out on the table, said, oh, I've got 27 models or whatever it was. And then they went, what? Are you... really, at this point? And then we clarified the point. So, like, oh, okay. So I deleted some stuff out a bit rapidly before the game started, which still managed to round off to exactly 400 points, but perhaps not the way I would normally do it. With that in mind, let's find out who that first opponent is and see how we got on. Game 1 of Imps Slow Grow 2024, and playing against a veteran gamer, someone who I like to think I kind of helped reintroduce to the hobby after many years of playing various other things. It's Jack Darlington. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, just taking it back a bit, as I mentioned there. I think I mentioned this when you sent an email into the podcast a couple of weeks ago. I think it was one of, if not the very first game of SBG I'd had in a very long time. And I sort of reintroduced you to the game and showed you about hurling and things like that, and you fell in love straight away.
I think it was actually the first game I played. I was using some borrowed bits off you.
Yeah.
And I fondly remember hurling Gandalf the White with the Witch King's Fell Beast into his own guys. And I think I certainly got rid of Shadowfax. I don't know if I killed Gandalf, but yeah, lots of fun.
Yeah.
Immediately fell in love with monsters.
I think ever since then, you've been sort of to various different Throne of Skulls events and lots of different events over the years. And as you say, always a high proportion of monsters in your armor, or usually anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing I loved about monsters was, like the hurls, I just love the brutal power attacks, because you get that real sort of sense of cinema of flinging people about, especially the named heroes, is very satisfying.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And obviously, this one is a little bit different because we've only got 400 points, so we're
we're building our army. This is the first slow growth. Were you in the previous Imp slow growth? I think you might have been, weren't you?
Yeah, the previous one, I had a bit of a weird journey with the previous one. I started with Isengard. I had Lurtz's scouts, and then things went a bit off the rails, and I brought a Mummock in, and then I sort of changed direction completely and went Harad for Harad, and that was just because I'd got some camels for my birthday, and I was like, I want to play with these now.
Yeah.
So yeah, completely changed tact and ended up going elephant camels. And had lots of fun.
Completely just dumped the Isengard. Forget the slow grow element. Let's not slowly grow anything. Let's just stop and start something else and fresh. I just remembered, before we move into this game, we mentioned the monsters and so on. The very first, I don't know whether it's still there, it must be, that we used to do film battle reports, just us two, back in the days when there weren't very much out on YouTube. But we also filmed something for Broadsword Wargaming, where you had a monster as well. You had the Witch King, and it all went terribly wrong for me. Yes. And I felt like I was playing an absolutely genius game, and you just kept wrecking me with your Witch King. That's still out there on YouTube, I think.
Yeah, that was by Ollie, I can't think of his second name. But yeah, Oliver Fabian. Broadsword Wargame is a great one to check out. But yeah, that's on there. And it all came down to, I think the Witch King tried to charge into a single rider of Rohan, and you had your beautiful line of Theoden's riders, and I actually failed the combat with the Witch King, and I was going to hurl it down your line, and I didn't manage to. But yeah, Gothmog was very sneaky with a bunch of orcs and got the back objectives, which... I think, the Witch King was a big old distraction.
I remember thinking that you completely enticed me that game and completely wrecked me. So with that in mind, revenge is on the cards here. No monsters in sight, though. So 400 points of slow grow. I've obviously got my fiefdom, so I've got Imrahil and Forlong, and I think there's 17 total other guys, and a couple of clansmen, a couple of knights, one mounted knight, and the rest of the men-at-arms. What have you brought to the first part of the slow grow?
So I've gone for something completely different for me, as I normally go for nice, fast, aggressive armies, and I've gone for a very slow, defensive one with Iron Hill's Dwarfs, led by Dane on his battle pig, of course, two goats with war lances, and then I've got a captain on foot with war spear and shield, seven dwarfs with war spears and shields, and I went for three crossbowmen as well.
Yeah, so 14 models for you, very high defence, obviously, except the crossbows, which are defence 6, and the goats, which are defence 6 as well, I think that's right. And of course, big thing here, which as soon as I started the game, I'm thinking, ooh, this is, you've got the master of battle here, so although you have one pip less might, you've got a big potential advantage there.
Yeah, the Master of Battle was certainly helpful throughout the game. It meant that I didn't have to spend that many of my might to start with. But yeah, it ultimately didn't help me altogether.
The thing is, you need to win priority roles. That's the problem. Because if you, Master of Battle is brilliant, if you're winning priority, the opponent's calling heroic moves, and then you're getting them for free. Whereas if you don't win any of those priority roles, you're having to still spend your might. I have spent, and you know, it's a net zero kind of thing. So, before we get into the detail of the actual fisticuffs, the terrain is really good. We're playing at Dice Cavern Games in Grantham, which is sort of halfway between Melton, where you are, and Lincoln for me. And there's quite a lot of terrain on this board. So there's a couple of little patchy areas of grass. There's quite a lot of terrain. There's lots of little fancy things. So it's quite dense in the centre, and there's a good couple of bits to block off combat potential in the middle, which is cool. And we're playing Breakthrough after we did, there's a veto system in play. I think it was Assassination, Recon and Breakthrough. I decided to veto Assassination, thinking that Forlong is potentially quite vulnerable to being assassinated, and I was fairly confident that you would end up vetoing Recon as you did.
Absolutely, yeah. I had two goats and Dane, but I'd need them getting stuck in. I didn't really want them running off on their own. I really fancied Assassination because I had my Defence 8 captain, Defence 9 in Shield Wall, so he probably could have hung around for a bit, but of course I won the roll off, which meant that Harry was able to pick the first veto scenario, got shot of Assassination, so I went for Breakthrough because, Recon was not a good one for me.
Fair enough. So I think Recon's a bit boring at this points level as well, because you've only got 14 and 17 models apiece. It's quite hot. I mean, it involves a lot of trekking up the board. So at least this one, there's all sort of centred around the middle. Breakthrough's 24-inch deployment on the line. There's those two objectives sort of on the line, but one on the east and one on the west. And then there's one you're defending, which is worth more to your opponents than it is to you, and then vice versa on the opponent's side. So we're cracking, trying trying to crack through, break through. It's all there in the name. So your deployment, you got to deploy the first warband, and there is a bit of a bottleneck here through towards your back objective. And you deployed slightly off the centre line, basically holding that gap. And then just to explain what happened in the first couple of turns.
So I started off with my shield wall sat in that first gap. And I had a couple of crossbowmen sat in the woods, which were next to it. Mm. But I think I can't remember who got priority, but I think you got priority.
Got the first priority,
yeah. And sort of edged forward, but just out of my charge range.
Yeah, because I've got this high move.
Yeah, yeah, so I thought, well, I'm not going to go forward and not reach him and then him charge me. So I actually fell back, thinking I can cover my back objective a little bit, but also force you to come towards me a bit. Mm. So hopefully then next time I get priority, I can do a counter charge. And I had the goats on the left flank, and I was thinking, because they had Mountain Dweller, they've got that slight extra chance of jumping over some of the low fences and getting charges in. But yeah, it didn't go to plan.
Well, I think the as we mentioned or hinted at already, the priority roles really kind of went in my favour. I think the first one I got was fine because it meant that I could position my stuff to within 6 inches of you, and then you were out of 5 inches, so you couldn't do anything that first turn to respond to where I'd moved to kind of cover over the first objective, over the centre line essentially, because we were fighting pretty much. I deployed on the centre line and you were deployed a few inches back, but. And then the next turn, I think I won priority you won priority. As you say, you moved back. But the guys in the woodland were just within reach, and they didn't move at all because you've got crossbows. So you thought, well, okay, don't want to edge them out too much. Maybe you wouldn't bother charging them. So I managed to kill one of those crossbowmen because he was sort of on the edge, and I managed to get a Lamadon and another guy and some pikes behind him. So I was starting to chip away at your models already, which I had a big advantage in terms of numbers as it was. So, but I think the main thing was because you'd moved back, it meant you had a lot more ground to make up to get to the back objective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think because I kept on losing the priorities, kept on losing heroic move offs as well, I was just slowly edging back. But also you sort of penetrated that blob of shields that I had and broke up my force a little bit. So I was then looking at traps or being trapped. You picked away at a few things. I lost a goat rider very early on who I brought in to try and relieve that stress in the middle. That didn't help me. And it all sort of fell to bits.
Yeah, I think to be fair, you're right. It was that first turn of combat where actually you won quite a few of the fights, more than perhaps I thought you were going to, because I had the banner and the higher fight in some places. But I think my line was a little bit stretched at that time, so I didn't have the fight value advantage in that very first combat. But it was against like the Clansmen and the Knights of Dol Amroth, and all you needed is like one or two kills there, and it would have really made that difference. But the Clansmen survived, against a one-on-one essentially, and it's little things like that which meant that my line was easily able to wrap around yours, take away spear sports. You didn't have a banner here. I had a massive banner in the Imrahil, plus the rerolls one from Forlong once he got stuck in. Yeah. So it was just quite a lot in my favour. And as you mentioned, the very first sort of combat turn, Imrahil and Forlong took out one of your goats, which was, I think, a sensible move on my part. And they heroic combated into your captain and tried to chip away at him. And then the next turn, there was one thing I think that you were umming and ahhing, and I think your desire for fights overtook you, because you had the other goat sort of quite far away. It was basically within reach of the central objective on the left-hand side, quite far away from the line. Yeah. And you were like, oh, should I charge Forlong or should I not? Because there was a debate as to whether you needed him in the fights. And I think that was a mistake. Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we discussed it quite a bit actually during the game, and I would put all my cards on the table and said, look, I'm thinking I can force you to make some decisions to pursue this goat, me going towards your back objectives, or I can bring him in and try and try and pop Forlong's horse. I knew it was a big gamble, but I thought it would help me out a lot in the long run if I can. But I think what ended up bringing the goat back into the fight is that I thought if I send him off on his own, you could quite easily heroic combat with probably Forlong or Imrahil, but we said probably more likely Forlong, and just go and chase him and deal with him on his own over there. And I thought if he's going to end up in combat with Forlong either way, I'd rather him be nearer my guys so that if I do win, I can come back in and help.
And also you got the charge advantage there because you got the war spear.
Yeah, having the war spear advantage was going to be really important. I also thought because I'm outpaced by your cavalry on, because you've got horses and I've only got the goats. I thought, is this going to be the only opportunity I'm going to have to get that charge and use the war spear? Mm. But yeah, I think because my infantry block was crumbling, I needed the extra support.
I think you're right. There was a third option. You could, as you're right, you say you could have run him off, which would run him away. You could have charged Forlong, which you did in the end. But there was another option, which was kind of hovering around the back and sort of potentially reinforce or get a turn the next turn to sort of charge some of my pike supports. And I think that might have been the better move. But even to be honest, just taking Forlong out of the fight for more than the turns that you did, because if you'd have gone 8 inches away towards the other objective, I would have either had to go chase him with Forlong, as you say, or leave him. And if I leave him, it potentially gives you the 4 VPs for going to the back objective.
Yeah.
So I'd kind of have to chase him down. As you said, the only thing that's chasing him down, Forlong, who at that point had quite a lot of might still, and he only had two, he only spent one, so he had 2 points of might. So I'd be pushing my might to the back of the board or halfway back. And even if it's one or two turns that I'm spending killing that guy, it's two turns that I've not got might in the centre, which helped me get the moves, especially, and then it gave Imrahil that might to carry on the fight for whether it's strikes or heroics or whatever, to be able to keep more pressure on Dane. So I think it might. I mean, we did talk about it, and you was like, "Yeah, let's go for it. We're having fun here." So I couldn't understand why he did it, but I think that would be the reason why I would have done it and pushed, because it's threatening the objectives is perhaps more important than threatening a secondary hero that didn't have the victory points of it. But
I think the other thing that I didn't consider, because when I was looking at the two heroes that could have combated away and chased that goat, the only mounted character or the only mounted models he had left were Forlong and Imrahil. Mm. And I thought, well, Imrahil's obviously doing his nice banner and he's doing the fight value.
Yeah.
Forlong, importantly, was giving you the reroll ones to wound.
Which so did come in handy a couple of times.
Came in very handy because obviously I've got the high defense. Most of your guys are sort of strength 3-ish. But because he was doing that, it affects the clansmen as well.
So the clansmen were getting, in particular, I think there was one time when a clansman rolled a one, got his five, which to get a 5x3 to kill an D8 guy, which is big.
The clansmen really put a lot of work in. I'm glad there was only a couple of them. Clansmen backed up by pikes with the banner, weight of dice. I was quite confident having defense 8 troops, but it wasn't enough.
Yeah, it wasn't, especially once, like you say, once I got the trap round. So in the end, I mean, that's kind of the long and short of it, wasn't it? That your line started crumbling. I think I'd lost 5 models, including you'd got a lucky shot with a crossbowman on my Knight of Dalamroth mounted, which was very frustrating. I'd lost 5 models I'd say in the first combat and the shooting phase. And by that point, we we're neck and neck. But then it was once you charged the goat into Forlong and killed him, then I was sort of 2 ahead. And then you never killed anything again, just because of the weight of dice after that. Mm-hmm. And even as much as, I think, was it the first turn that Forlong or someone charged into Dane and you had to spend 3 points of fate on him very early on? He'd saved all his wounds, but it was like little things like that, kind of the pressure was clearly... you were feeling the pressure on your side. So I think it was really tricky for you to then start getting any momentum back, and you were so hemmed in over your objective. And I think that's largely because you dropped back into the gap, which kind of small gaps benefit pikes more than they benefit your guys, I think, probably, because I could put my pikes to advantage. So in the end, it ended up being a 9-0 win to me. So I just managed to break through in the end, get the 4 points for the rear objective, and Forlong ran back after killing the goat to get the one of the central objectives. Another pike had fallen back to the other central objective, so I got the two middle ones and the back one, and I broke you. Dane survived, Imrahil survived as well, but neither have any might left, so it would be a dice roll, really, a 50-50 as to who wins next. But I guess I have a lot more dice, so with the banner and the remaining troops on the board. So it was a cracking game, though, and I think all you need to do is kill stuff when you actually win the combats, and maybe be on for a good go, because it was pretty rough that first turn. Had two clansmen you beat in combats and neither died, which was a big deal.
I mean, at first the game was looking, it looked okay. I think there was like one casualty in it either side. I'd lose one, you'd lose one, I'd lose a couple, you'd lose a couple, and then yours, your casualties peaked at five, and mine just kept on tallying up, and it snowballed.
And actually, I was thinking, because when you were saying those things, the neck and neck, I was like, oh yeah, neck and neck. But I was sort of secretly thinking, yeah, but these guys that I'm neck and neck with, they're the D6 ones, not the D8 ones. So like, there's a big difference, a 6x4 to just a straight six. You know, that's halving the number of wounds I was doing. So I was thinking, oh, I'm neck and neck now, but is that if this carries on at the same rate, I'm going to have half the number of kills per turn that you will have. But I think it was just the weight of numbers. That was the thing. I got fairly lucky in the first turn where I didn't lose as many guys as I thought I would lose. And then that meant that I just had more guys to trap you. So, and that was that. So there you go. Start of the Imp Slogo 2024. Start with a 9-0 win. Does that mean I'll be facing some sweaty nonsense in the next one? We'll find out. Thank you very much for the game, by the way, Jack.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Now we'll find out. Yes. Jack Darlington there. What a lovely fella Jack is. Pleasure to be able to play another game against a very good friend of mine in the league. And also a big shout out for his painting, because he is an extraordinary painter, absolutely extraordinary. I mean, anyone who knows him will have seen his work and been bowled over by it. And this army was no exception. We didn't really refer to it in there because he all blushes and he's all modest and all that sort of stuff. But he's very, very, very talented painter, and I'm really excited to see a sort of pictures of his finished army when it comes to it. And I know, Jack, often you listen, so do send me pictures when your army is finished. I'm very, very keen to look at that. And also, I should point out, despite the win, happy with the win, fine, I'm okay with that, it was good start to the slow grow, I need to point out that, you know, I mentioned at the start that I had to rapidly delete models from the army because we realised that there were too many models in my army and realised that I'd come with 500 rather than 400 points. Well, it turns out I didn't take all of those off the table. So I actually played against Jack with a 2-model advantage. So I was playing with 19 models on the table. And I was meant to have 17, so I think I had 2 extra men at arms than I should have. So a bit of a boo-boo, must be said, but hey, I'll take it. I'll take it on the chin. I'll accept accusations of wrongdoing. And I did let Tim, tournament organizer Tim, know about this at some point, sort of not long after, and he sort of said, well, you know, not much we can do now. Let the score stand. And Jack, I apologise to Jack as well, and he was fine with it. He said that, you know, it didn't make much difference in the long run. So I hope that's okay. I hope that's okay, everyone. But it also immediately means that if I do win the Slogo League, it will put a sort of a taint on the any potential victory. But anyway, we move on. So second game, Slogo Part 2. This is a less weird sort of army, I think, because this one hasn't been chopped away at. So this is the 500 points I wanted to take to the first one, so it's a bit more balanced. So in short, it is Imrahil, 8 men at arms, 2 knights on foot, 3 clansmen of Lamadon, 3, 1 mounted knight of Dalamroth in one warband, and then 4 long on his horse, 6 men at arms, 2 clansmen, 2 foot knights and 1 mounted knight of Dalamroth in the second warband for a total of 27 models, 14 of which are men-at-arms, and I have 6 points of might, and I'll break it sort of 13 left on the table. So quite strong, I think, for 500 points to have quite that many numbers. 2 big cavalry knights that are very potent, powerful, but of course 5 clansmen and 0 bows. And I know what you're saying, because I think last episode I spoke about, I think we had this debate, didn't we, about the GP, I think it was the GP Grand Prix, where someone had emailed in saying, why didn't you take any bows? I'm curious at your choice of the lack of bows. And the reason was I didn't paint enough in time. So this game at 500 points took place before the Grand Prix, so hence the lack of bows. But we will reintroduce bows later on in the podcast. But in the meantime, let's find out what happens in game number 2. Game number 2 in the Imp Slogo League. We're up to 500 points. I've got 4 long, I've got Imrahil, I've got a lot more dudes than I had last time against Jack, playing against Alex Langford. Good evening there, Alex, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, it's great to be on. A long time listener.
How are you?
Yeah, long time listener, first time appearance.
Well, it's great. And also, you've been, I think we've We've certainly seen each other and talked to each other here at Imps quite a few times over the years, but we've never really had many chances at games. I feel like it's been a long time since we did play many moons ago in a friendly kind of thing, I assume. I can't even remember.
I think you were one of the, when I first started a couple of years ago, or came back to it a couple of years ago, one of my first teaching games, I think, was with you, I think.
Yeah, I was doing quite a lot of them back then when you started. Yeah.
I think you had some fancy Numenor, I think.
Okay, yeah.
I could be wrong. I can't remember what I did yesterday, so...
Yeah. God, tell me about it. So you started in the very first Imps Logo League, MESBG, not really a big thing until the sort of the Pelennor Fields box, wasn't it? And then it just suddenly grew here, and we've got quite a little community growing here in Lincoln now.
Yeah, it's the Imps is fantastic for the Imps scene. I mean, you've got so many people that organise events in Lincoln. Obviously, you, myself, a couple of other people, then you've got Imps that has a huge range of stock and all the tables and gear. It's a fantastic game system, and the fact that you can do this Slogro I'm pretty much doing with an Isengard box set and a couple of ballistas, just of what was available. So it's a cheap game as well, definitely one of the best games there is, I think.
I couldn't agree more with pretty much everything. I'd completely forgot, though, about your... you organised tournaments. Was it you who did the Little Things tournament?
It was. Enjoy the Little Things, 200 points. That's coming back again this year.
Very exciting.
And there'll be another one similar. So hopefully there'll be two events in that sort of points range this year.
Well, because it's interesting, because that one, I was... I had a great tournament. I really enjoyed it. But apparently I was breaking the rules in the thing. So I think my list was Hobbits and Rangers, and I'd forgotten that Rangers only get the two attacks or something when it's a pure Ranger list or something like that. So I was cheating the whole time. Didn't do very well anyway, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's just fun at the end of the day. Yeah, yeah. If it had been, you know, a top place finish, maybe someone would have looked into it. But at the end of the day, it's just fun. And if anyone gets real... mad about, you know, a tournament like that, well, I don't know if it's necessary.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, so as you said already, you're getting a Isengard box set for the Slogo. So you had your first game at 400 points. What sort of stuff did you have in the previous one, and what have you brought along for your 500 points today?
So the 400 was Saruman on his lovely white horse.
Yeah. I'm just loading up the script right now, so that's why it might sound a bit confused, but you get the battle pot. Yeah, so it's interesting you started with Saruman, because he's what, 200 points? 200 and something?
190 with his horse. So I've only ever run lists that don't really have a huge magic-heavy impact. I did run Harad for a while, Serpent Horde, but you don't really cast with the Betrayer. He just sits and poisons the arrows more. So I figured, you know, why not? Let's go. And it's probably highly controversial, but Saruman is the best caster. You know, feel free to have a wizard duel with me.
I think on paper he's the best caster. I guess the argument is Witch King more versatile and Sauron bigger? And, you know, there's a lot of debate to have. But, yeah, he's certainly one of the best.
Yeah, I mean, you throw a crown on the Witch King and send him against Saruman. Saruman's dead 6 ways to Sunday. Sauron doesn't even come close, but Sauron's double the point, so either way. But yeah, it was just something fun. It meant that I didn't have to paint as many models. I'm terrible for getting things painted. So it's basically I just used what I could from the box set, plus a couple of ballistas that I found at Imps. Games Workshop have just got nothing in stock at the moment.
I know, it's been an absolute disaster. I mean, mine was the same. My men-at-arms are not in stock, so I've got a load of Perry miniatures, which I love. So your first time it was mostly... Saruman and a few friends, but this one you've got more than just Saruman now.
Yeah, so the first one was 8 berserkers, 6 crossbows and 2 orcs with shield. Saruman at 500 points, I went again out of the comfort zone and I added in Vrasku. Everyone knows how a shooty hero works, and I tried to go with something different and adding Grima. I just, the ability to deny, you know, heroic actions is huge. I don't know if I use it to its fullest potential, but It's always a learning curve. So
well, I mean, it's just a great way at this points level to drain points of might from the opponent. And you know, we both started on 6 points of might, three on each of my heroes, 3 on Vrasku and 3 on Saruman. So having Grimmer kicking about really, really starts putting the pressure on there. So I think. Oh, we should. I guess we start talking about the game. The game was Command the Battlefield. We did the veto system, and I'm going to forget what they are. There was Lords of Battle, Clash by Moonlight, and Command the Battlefield. I had to do the first veto, and I said no to Clash by Moonlight because you had so many Uruk-hai crossbows, and I thought even if I close that line in, they're going to be hit, wounding me on fours, and there's quite a lot, wasn't it? Was it six? Did you say?
Six crossbows. Six crossbows plus Vrasku, so it'd have been eight shots.
Even if it's only one or two turns because of the blinding light thing, it's going to be quite nasty in those couple of turns, and I thought I didn't rate my chances, especially with Saruman blasting away at us as well, so I didn't really like that. So it left Command the Battlefield and Lords of Battle, and what did you go with and why?
So I think we went with... I vetoed Lords of Battle... I don't think Saruman's going to outkill Imrahil and Forlong. So I went for the Command the Battlefield, thinking that I'd have a bit of range, you know, a bit of magic. I still got the mobility, and then Grima's there to try and stop you doing the heroic moves, the marches. Hopefully try and block you a little bit.
Yeah, because I suppose Lords of Battle, you've got... I deploy on the centre line. You could probably deploy back and still shoot at me, but eventually you're going to run out of shots, and I guess my guys are going to slam into you. But as it happened, it was Maelstrom. I think both of us... rolled for basically one corner. The key roll here, you rolled a three on the start, and I put you as close to one of the corners as possible. It was the very first thing on the board. I think it was Saruman and his friends, and so that and that dictated where the rest of your stuff ended up going. And it also, because you won the priority, it meant that I could try and get as close to you as possible. As it happened, it just worked that my guys were able to pincer you into the corner. And in Command the Battlefield, that's key, isn't it? Just being able to corner off one of the table half quarters.
Yeah, I mean, being 6 inches from a corner, I branched out as much as I could. I probably overextended with Saruman a little bit, thinking that you wouldn't roll as with the ability to choose both of your warbands. But yeah, with crossbows in a Maelstrom scenario, walking on with them, they're useless turn one. Obviously, because I went first, Saruman couldn't move on and cast anything. So yeah, the potential was lost on that priority roll.
Yeah, and then I think the next turn it was just one thing. I actually I'd settled my stuff quite badly because Forlong was sort of hemmed in. Imrahil could have called the move, but he would have had to spend 2 points of might because Grimmer was following me around. But Forlong called the move. Saruman countered, and it was basically either could charge Imrahil and Forlong could get into Saruman pretty much, and I won the roll off, and it meant Saruman was pinned down, wasn't doing any magic in that first turn, and then he had an Imrahil in his face for the next couple of turns, which was never going to go well, I suppose, eventually.
No, so I tried my best. Obviously, if that first priority or second priority, sorry, would have gone the other way, it'd have probably, or I'd have tried to have dismounted Imrahil or Forlong with a nice sorcerous blast. Then just ran in behind everything, kept him safe, and yeah, I think that's.
It was just the two turns went. I won the first heroic move roll off. I spent 2 points of might from Forlong in the second one because Grimmer was in range, and I won both of them, and that was kind of it, wasn't it? Because when you've got a fight six hero against Saruman who can't strike, I've got a lance, and then Forlong came in for the second turn. It was kind of curtains for Saruman pretty quickly.
Yeah, so Vrasku tried his best with his heroic combats to get round there and to aid him, but I think the first one he actually won and managed to slay a pipeman, but the second one. He double threed, needing a four. So, he stuffed himself up.
it was very unlucky. And I think actually maybe it was because you'd called a heroic combat in the very first turn. I think probably wisely thinking, oh, you can pick up some extra guys. Vrasku is no slouch. He had a friend with him in a fight against the pike or something like that. And you called a heroic combat, but I don't know whether it was necessary at that point. It might have been more useful at that point. I might later on in the game when you could use him to threaten Imrahil and drain my resources, but.
Yeah, so I'm a slouch for spending it as quickly as possible. I tend to think when I'm playing good armies, I tend to save it a little bit more because there's a bit more versatility, I think. But you know, when you've only got one fake, two wounds, I tend to think it's better gone than dying with it. And I was in a situation where he could have been charged by Imrahil and Forlong if you wanted to, just to get rid of him. Which, after Saruman was out of might, was a huge. huge thing in the back of my mind. So
yeah, because it was worth noting that Saruman's fate rolls are, or something, I can't remember what it was that he had to spend his might on, but they did. It didn't go well. He lost 3 points of fate quite quickly, and he spent 2 points of might, one to get on the board, one to do a move, and then another one on something else. I can't remember what, but either way, it wasn't very helpful for him.
No, it's the first charge from Imrahil was only one wound, but that cost 3 points of might fate to stay alive, just not lose a wound. And then obviously the second round, Imrahil trapped him with a buddy and cut him to pieces.
Yeah, basically. And the it's worth noting at this point, because I'd hemmed you so far into the corner, I mean, you were probably around 10, 12 inches from the corner, and you know, you were very, very far away from getting anywhere. I had plenty of dudes surrounding you. I'd killed enough stuff in the first turn. I'd outnumbered you from, I think it was 27 to 17 or something.
18 model.
27 to 18. So I already knew that I had the model advantage. So I was comfortably able to send a Knight of Dol Amroth into one table quarter and send a clansman and a pikeman to try and capture the other quarter. So I was losing a lot of dudes. We should know. I think I ended up breaking before you. Obviously, you take checks later than me anyway because of your 33% bonus from the Isengard faction thing. But it was pretty. There was a bit of time where I was like, oh crap, if I break too quickly, then those guys that I've sent to those corners might run, and then my whole game plan has completely collapsed. But luckily I killed Saruman, as you said, quite quickly. That meant that Grimmer was no longer able to drain my resources, and it was all kind of hunky-dunky from there onwards.
Yeah, so Grimmer just became a fight three warrior, basically. Yeah. Berserkers are terrifying. And
yeah, my God, they did so much damage.
Yeah, two attacks, you know, the strength four, fight four, they killed, I think you'd had about 10 or 12 guys very, very quickly, but it was just no heroes for me, and terrible at rolling for priority. Is you just can't stand up to two real nice beefy heroes. 12 inch banner, 3 inch plus one fight, 3 inch rerolling ones to wound. It's
6 inch
shoot. Is it 6? Sorry,
yeah,
6.
So the reroll ones are 6, so yeah. But yeah, I mean, once I got into it, I sort of thought, well, if Imrahil and Forlong, ideally both of them, or maybe at least one of them, can kill Saruman as quickly as possible, then I've got the might to be able to call heroic combats, and then Imrahil and Forlong can then do the work. They actually did both get unhorsed in the following turn after a couple of heroic combats went awry. So it all did start looking a bit dodgy, but realistically there was no chance I was ever really going to lose the objective game of taking those table quarters by the end.
Yeah, no, even if we'd have had a far more normal deployment, I still think you'd have had more table quarters than me, unless I could have had an insane few turns, you know, not losing any models.
Well, you just needed your magic. You didn't. I mean, it's sad to say it, but look, Saruman, I'm looking at my notepad now, he's got 6 points of will. Still, he'd never got to cast any magic at all. Because you sort of said after the second turn, oh, I should have cast Aura of Command on the first, Aura of Terror or Dismay or something on the first turn. But you're like, oh, I'll do it next time.
Yeah, it was.
There wasn't
it
next time.
We don't play Maelstrom often. I don't know why. I think people just don't like it.
Yeah.
But I always forget you can cast spells when you move on. And just as I move on, channeling a terrifying aura. I think it's terrifying or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just making those few leadership courage tests. Sorry, wrong game. A few courage tests to charge could have made all the difference. Just having, you know, one Swan Knight not being able to charge me, or one Axeman being stuck on his own for a crossbow shot, or something like that would have made a huge difference.
As you say, it's a dice game, and it was unlucky to lose both of those key roll-offs on the bounce, and there was no way you were ever going to recover from it, really. So it ended up being an 11-1 victory to me. So I did get broken. We both broke each other, but I managed to kill Saruman and take all of the quarters just by 1 point on the final quarter, where there was 4 guys left on your side, 8 guys in the that quarter. So it was a decisive victory to me. But Alex, it's been a pleasure to play you once again after you've been a key member of the Lincoln community for so long.
Oh, thank you. It was a fantastic game. It's one of those games, even though you got absolutely beaten in, it was just a night of fun and good laughs. So you can never be unhappy with a game of Lord of the Rings against Harry.
Oh, well, that's I'll end on that ringing endorsement. Thanks, Alex, for talking to you on the podcast.
Cheers. Thank you very much for having me.
There we go. Alex, great to play against Alex. A jolly, jolly fellow indeed. And a stalwart in the community here in Lincoln. He's relatively new to the game, sort of, but he's been kicking around for a couple of years. But he plays a lot of systems and he's done tournaments and stuff like that, ran tournaments in Lincoln. The miniature tournament that he ran a couple of years back or a year or so ago was brilliant. Really liked that. I hope he does it again. It was a 200-point tournament, which was ace. I enjoyed the sort of the value of that. And it's certainly inspired me to plan something for my 100th episode, which I'll leave hanging there, 100-point or 100th episode. Anyway, let's see what happens there. Now, okay, so let's move on. So we're continuing to build said army of fiefdoms. So that was 500. We had 27 models there. We had Imrahil and the Forlong, but with the much bulkier warbands. Now we're going to add, what are we going to add for this 100 points? So I thought the option was pretty straightforward. So this is what I'm going to add. So, well, I've got to sort of twiddle with things a bit, but here we go. So we've got Imrahil, mounted with lance, and he has alongside him a 7 men-at-arms, 2 Knights of the Lamroth on foot, 2 clansmen, 1 knight, mounted knight. We've got then Forlong with 6 men-at-arms, 2 clansmen, 1 Knight of the Lamroth on foot. So a slight change there. We've lost 1 Knight of Dol Amroth from that warband, and I think we'd lost 1 clansman from the first warband from the previous one. So we've lost a couple of dudes, but we have gained Dwinhir, Blackroot Vale archers times 8, 4 of which have spears, for a total of 33 models and 9 bows, 8 might, and 600 points. Now, so this is where we're getting actually pretty tasty in the league. So I've actually, so I mean, I hadn't really pointed this out, but in our little slow grow league, what did I say? 400, 500, 600, 700, 800. So there's 5 games. So far I've won 2. So going into this next game, it's you know, the sort of, the people who I'm playing are now sort of solid players, good quality, good fun, good tacticians. And it's getting harder and harder. So at 600 points, bearing in mind I did really well, or I like to think I did really well, at the Grand Prix with an army very similar to this. I think I gained 1 model here. I think I put an extra bowman in this time. Is the Dwinhir and friends going to make the difference against game number 3's opponent? Let's find out. Game number 3 of the Imp Slow Grow, and so I'm doing all right in the Slow Grow. I've got 2 wins so far, but game number 3, ooh, we're getting to the heady heights of the league now. So I'm playing against Aaron Atkinson. Aaron, welcome along to the podcast.
Thank you.
So first of all, you've been playing. So we both played 2 games so far. What have you brought for the league, and how have you built that up so far in the first 2 games for the 200 and the 400 point contingents?
Okay, so yeah, I've got Rohan, but I've been playing Helmsguard. So the first few games, I was just him and his warband.
I love that. So yeah. How many points is Helmy? Is it, what, 120, 30?
75.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot more sense because he's got a lot of stuff going on. Why did I think 120?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. So he would. So the first game, it was literally him and what, 2 or 3 Royal Guard?
Yeah, I think I had a couple of Royal Guard on horse, a Outrider on horse, and then a few Royal Guard just for spears, and that was it. Right. But I love him. I think he's brilliant, and I love the fact that in his legion you can use the spears as throwing spears and spears to support as well.
Mm-hmm. And at low points, he's just got so much going for him, hasn't he? I mean, he's got the free heroic combat. He's got a free point of might every turn. He's fight 5, which is a little downside to an extent, but fight 5, a strength 5 with a burly weapon. So, you know, he can absolutely chop stuff at that sort of points level. Defense 7, and what is he? Has he got only 1 fate? Is that right?
Yeah, just the 1 fate, but 3 wounds, 3 attacks, defense 7, as you said. Fortunately, he's just got a normal horse, not an armored horse, which is another little weakness from him. But first game was up against the Warg Riders.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so that was a nice one because they were topping out at fight 4, no heroic strike. So once he got in amongst them and he was throwing, combating through them, that was pretty brutal.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. So that was a nice one, a nice little start to get going with. And then the second game was against Fiefdoms, so I had a similar problem where he's fight 5 against a lot of warriors that are also fight 5, which is his his big weakness is when you can't make use of that heroic combat because you've got a strike up just to keep him on the board, as it were.
But at least he has that 3-point of might to be able to do the heroic strikes for free, which is really helpful. And so coming into this one, you ended up with, I think I've written it down here, it's 27 models. So an interesting mix, though, because you've got a lot of outriders. What made you bring them along? Is it just the models, or...?
So, I don't like to take too much cavalry, which is weird when I play Rohan, because when you break down into the fight, especially if you're in any kind of like choke points, they can just quite easily get nullified by quick charges from infantry, and you can't get as many in. So, making use of the spears is great, but I like to have the outriders so that they can move around, try and capture points. Didn't work as well as I'd like today, but we'll get into that, I'm sure. But yeah, and I think just some... Shooting at threes is a good little sort of equaliser, especially against things like Blackroot Vale archers.
Yeah. But yeah, so you've got quite a few of them. So you got what, was it three outriders on horse and then a couple of out walkers? Four, is it four?
Four on horse and four walking.
Four on horse and four walking. And then you've got what, five Royal Guard on horses, and then the rest of the troops are Royal Guard and two interesting heroes. You've gone a bit sideways. What are the heroes you got?
So I've just got two King's Huntsmen, which I think are massively underrated. This is quite a terrain heavy board, so on boards like this, rolling for you in the ways and only on a one, and also being able to target people's horses, especially for big heroes, I think is absolutely brilliant. Yes, they can get their might back if they kill a hero as well, but that doesn't go off as much. I've only had it go off a few times in games that I've played, but the main reason for me for them is taking out the horses.
Those in the way rolls is very interesting. And I think you managed to get Forlong's horse with that. Never did get Imrahil's, but because they're a good army, they can't shoot into combat, which I guess is the other is the slight downside. The one thing I thought when you deployed both your King's Huntsmen and your a couple of bows on buildings, which I think. Generally, I think it's a bad idea. I think generally it means you're tied to the building. You can't do. But you did get constant shooting right into the end game, and you did hop a huntsman off at the end game, which did help, which we'll get to in a second. But first, it is in the league. It is a veto system. I won the roll off for the veto, and we had Fog of War, Capture and Control, and Heirlooms of Ages Past as the choices. And Aaron, what did you vote veto, and why?
So I got rid of heirlooms, which seems potentially like a strange one because I had a banner and you didn't. And I know there's obviously points in that for a banner. But with having two quite squishy King's Huntsman warbands, if I'd rolled badly for the Maelstrom deployment, they could quite easily have got chopped up. And I just hate that one because it's so swingy. If someone just rolls out six and they've got it in their deployment, it's just so difficult for the person that's obviously got to then try and get across the board and get into it. So I just don't like that one very much, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think actually, though, of all the heroes that could crack through the line, Helm's probably one of the ones that could. But, yeah, I can certainly understand why he did it. I ended up vetoing Fog of War, partially because I thought that Helm would absolutely annihilate either Dwinhir or Forlong. Yes, I could put Imrahil in the way to try and stop him from doing that, but then if Imrahil's not doing that to try and protect Forlong, then he's not getting one of the huntsmen. And I did wonder how it would be quite easy for you to protect a huntsman by doing exactly what you did, putting him on a building, and then one of my heroes is never going to get them. Shooting the defence five guys within the ways, I just thought was very unlikely to actually kill them. So I thought we're going to play capture and control, which we did. So that's the five objectives, one in the middle, four in a diamond around it, and 2 points for each of them, plus one for breaking and one for the enemy leader. So with that in mind, deployment kind of... I put my stuff in the middle, and you... I mentioned you deployed your guys on the buildings. What were you most worried about in this scenario?
I think it was just you getting into my lines too quickly with that 5-5, potentially shutting down Helm, which, yeah, happened a few times anyway. But I think it was just you chopping through my troops too quickly and me not being able to get forward. Because it's not just Imrahil that I saw as a threat, because you had Fall on the Fat and he's got that +1 on the charge. He was on the horse. He too could cut through one side. And that was my big worry, because you could then control quite a lot of the board.
And frankly, that's what happened. It is, like York, because you deployed a big chunk of your stuff against the Imhotep warband. I had four long on the other side with the intention of sweeping around to the objectives, capturing, killing all the stuff. And the thorn in my side was the fact that I couldn't kill everyone on the higher levels. But it, essentially, that four long did sweep through. That my bows were sort of holding the back objective, peppering stuff. Didn't really do anything with the shooting. It was a bit of a waste of time. But it also, I deployed on the line and you were kind of going into me. So I kind of had a bit of board control at the start. And the early turns went very much my way. I mean, a lot was going in my favour. I think my Imrahil got charges where your Helm didn't, because of the way heroic moves and deployment landed. And I started killing some of your guys, but not loads. Your throwing weapons weren't very good for generally, but certainly early on. So I feel like I had the momentum early on. But once Helm started getting stuck in, he did start his heroic combats and the stuff that started chopping. And then I didn't have enough might in one place. I think the big thing that I did here, which was probably a bad choice, was splitting all of my might up across the board. So I had four long on one side, which I think was maybe a good idea to try and hold on to one of the side objectives. Dwin here on the back, though, and then Imrahil's might was kind of on his own against the three heroic moves, sorry, the three heroic combats and the free might from Helm Hammerhand. Do you think that's a pretty good summary?
Yeah, and I think you sort of realised that a few turns in when you moved Dwin here across. I definitely think you were dominating the one side where Forlong was, and I think that was a good move. And you realised, but we also had to get him to where you needed him, you had to get him through difficult terrain, which was also sort of hampered you a little bit there. Yeah, there was terrible rolling, I think, from both of us from shooting.
Oh, yeah, I mean, they basically didn't come into it. I mean, I think you killed, with the Huntsman, I think you killed both of my knight's horses. And I think that's kind of it certainly for the first three quarters of the game. I mean, late game, you started picking out pikes, I think, in the middle rank of the pikes, which was really handy for you. It took away some of my big advantages. But generally, early on, it was pretty dire.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think 26 or so shots in the first turn, and I took one horse maybe first turn, and I just thought...
I think there was one horse and the one pikeman, and that was it for ages. And I think I'd done some things back, but not a lot really. I never did my heroic move, a heroic shoot, just because there was so much in the ways that I thought I'd be halving the number of shots I'd get in there for the reroll, so it didn't seem worth it. But yeah, generally, I think I played it relatively well in the early part of the game, but it all started falling apart. Your army just had more staying power than mine. I don't know whether it's down to the D6 or just the might from Helm, I guess.
Yeah, I think a combination of the both there, because you were winning quite a lot of the fights and you just couldn't get the kills on the Royal Guard with the D6. You did pretty quickly chop through any of the outriders that you got into fights with, but they just sort of, they held on. There was a few at the back that held on. You did have your hero, his D6, that I just could not kill, even though he was on the floor for three rounds.
Yeah, there was a Knight of Dol Amroth who got charged in the first turn, lost the fight because the pike had been taken away from the back of him, and he just survived. He's still there. He's still right at the end of the game, and he was standing on the right objective as I was looking at for the whole game. He took it the first turn basically, and then got knocked over, punched and beaten, and spears thrown at him and everything, and right till the end he still neutralised that objective. So he was an absolute hero for the game. But yeah, you're right, I think the rest of it sort of, it fell apart largely, I think, because my army was split up and it's designed to be fighting together. If Forlong was over on the other side with Imrahil, I would have had more of a chance of wounding stuff, but then I would also not have had the hero on the other side to take the left hand side flank, which I'd held on to for a very long time. But in the very last turn, your huntsman, after I'd kind of abandoned the that side, there was a Knight of Dol Amroth fighting against the huntsman and an outrider on the parapet of an Osgiliath ruin, and he killed the outrider, but he was slowly sort of fighting against this huntsman and just not die. The huntsman was refusing to die, so eventually the huntsman did win that fight and jumped off and took the objective, which I'd kind of moved away from, which was a bit of a mistake, but I needed my four-long standfast to keep my archers alive on the back objective, which I did hold. So it was kind of either or, I guess.
Yeah, I think it just came down a lot to when you had broken, just trying to keep who you needed to in the fight. And that was just very difficult for you when you'd lost Imrahil, because I'd managed to surround Imrahil and he was out of my helm, had obviously struck up, taking him down. You were sort of trying to jump back and forth to get the stand fast off to keep the guys you needed.
And it's worth noting, I think the reason I had to keep dotting backwards and forwards was because I broke three turns ago. So we had two turns where we didn't roll the one or two, and then it's ended on the third. So by that third turn, it was the third turn that you took the rightmost objective as you were looking at it, and that was key. And also, actually, the your rear objective, which I'd claimed a couple of turns earlier, you managed to flip over in the second turn. So I think the very first turn, if it had ended, I would have had a four-point increase on what I ended up with. But if it ended on the second turn, I ended up a two-point increase. And the final one was down to what we ended up on, which was a 6-5 loss to me. So, I mean, it sounds like I'm making excuses there. But, I mean, because it is a one-in-three chance of that ending. So I should have had a better plan to hold on to those objectives for at least one more turn, but I could have got lucky there and really stolen quite a big win from you.
Yeah, I knew, I sort of did a quick maths, and I knew that if we rolled the one or the two, you were going to get it then, and that just was very lucky for me, that it did go for the two turns, and I nearly got the middle objective, because I did a heroic combat from the back objective with helm. But you obviously saw what I was trying to do and very cleverly moved your guy forward just so that I couldn't get fully onto it.
Yeah, because I think the previous turn, Helm had won someone had won the fight, or I'd moved my pikes away from the back objective. So you were basically 10 inches away from the objective, and I had a guy standing on the objective. So I just moved him forward an inch so that no matter what happened, if you charged him this turn, the objective would still be in my control, because obviously he was going to die. It was just an archer. And it did end that turn. It did end that turn. So I guess the other thing that we should mention is that it would have gone from a 6-5 loss to a 8-3 loss in the next turn, almost guaranteed, because you would have got that objective in the centre. And there's also a chance that I'd have run all the way on the other objective right at the back, because you had a Royal Guard threatening that one as well. And I had only two or three... dudes there, so it was definitely one of those games where even if I had have won here, it would have been a really strange win, because Imrahil's dead, Hammerhand is just on the field ready to kill everything that's there, and I have very little to stand up against him.
Yeah, it was definitely nail biting towards the end. Yeah. I mean, the other thing that we haven't mentioned was having the bodyguard and the royal guard.
Yeah, they all just stuck around.
They stuck around. I didn't need to worry about trying to do. As long as Helm was there, they were all good. But yeah, it was very, very close. Closer than I've had in a while.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to have fought it down to the wire. And it was a very close game. So 6-5 loss. But congratulations, Darren. That means game number four, the Slow Grow, means it puts you in contention for winning the local Slow Grow. So congratulations and best of luck in the final game, which I believe will be against Harry West, who's a friend of the podcast. So best of luck against him.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that. Great game.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Really fascinating game there against Aaron. Genuinely really enjoyed it. A cracking opponent, lovely at the tabletop, but also really, really kept me guessing and sort of lulled me into a false sense of security. He deployed some archers on top of the buildings, which I usually don't rate, but in this instance it worked. King's Huntsman, awesome. Loved the inclusion of those. And I think just my strategy, it was a bit of a gamble. If I'd have gone for a sort of more conventional smash into his army and try and kill it, which is the sort of thing that I would usually do, I might have come out better in this instance. But because I just left too many of those Rohan Royal Guard on the table at the end, the D6, the Fight 5, and the bodyguard in particular, meant that they were staying there. There was no shifting the guys, and I kind of split up my forces too late to actually be able to break them and dilute the numbers when I needed to. So really well played. Helm Hammerhand, someone that I'd really love to get on the tabletop. I don't actually own a model. I've got some nice Forge World models kicking about, tucked away in drawers, but I've never gotten a Helm Hammerhand. And with the War of the Rohirrim film coming out later this year, and I just watched a really long interview with Philippa Boyens and the other writers from the that film in the on the Nerd of Rings on YouTube, and I've really enjoyed it. Really got me hyped, really excited for the prospect of some Helm Hammerhand action. So it's got me interested, especially after this game, of playing with a Helm Hammerhand army. So maybe that's the catalyst I needed to crack into some more Rohan again at some point this year. But it won't be next week. I mentioned already, it might be a small army, or it could be
a very large army. But we don't know yet. We don't know yet. We'll find that out in the next episode. But that's it for this one. So three quite substantial interviews there for the podcast. So hopefully they haven't been too meandering. But I thought it was quite nice to have a chat about hobby a bit more in the interviews when we've got a little bit more time than I do at tournaments. Tournaments are more of a rush to interview the opponents and get on to the next game. But this one, plenty of time in a gaming evening to do such things. So that was that. I mentioned earlier on in the podcast that I wanted to talk about vetoes. Now, I basically thought for a while that they've been sort of creeping up, haven't they? Veto competitions and games that have veto in them. And it's becoming, you know, if not the sort of de facto, it's certainly like, I'd say half of the tournaments that we go to these days, or I certainly go to these days, are veto tournaments. And it got me thinking, are they good? Is this the way to do it? Let me just delve into a question that I asked out to patrons. So essentially what I did to my patron supporters, I asked them on the old patron page, what sort of questions would you like me to answer in the questions that need answering section? I got some really interesting responses, actually. So they'll be slowly introduced over the coming weeks and months. But I really liked this one. Michael Haskell, regular intelligent contributor to the podcast and a doubles partner for Seven Stones and a good friend. Very excited to rekindle our doubles partnership after an absence last year at Seven Stones this May. And basically, he asked this, and he said, I'll read it all in full because he's an erudite, sensible man. He says, I know you've talked about this before, but not sure in a really in-depth manner. The veto mechanism. I've only played it the once, and I remain uncertain that it is something which should have more prominence rather than less. Ultimately, I guess it depends on the degree of good fortune players feel is appropriate to win a tournament, as opposing to drawing on their own abilities of army building, tactical play, etc. Thoughts. So, with that in mind, I wanted to throw this out to you. The veto system was in play during the Slogro, and I have no real problem with that. But the argument, I think, as Michael has suggested, is one, that it sort of eliminates some of the good fortune, which is fair. But there are two other things that I want to sort of bones of contention that I have with the veto system. So number one is, does it decrease the variety of armies? So for instance, if you know you can veto certain scenarios, I don't know, are you more likely to take Goblin Town and so on? So maybe it decreases. I don't know whether it increases or decreases, but there are certain armies that it sort of, that the conventional tournament system kind of puts a kibosh on and really, really prevents them dominating the top table. So something like a Goblin Town army is really good at most scenarios, but if you come up against it in Lords of Battle, it's kind of an instant win. But if you can veto Lords of Battle, then it suddenly becomes a lot better. And there are other, I'm sure there are lots and lots of other armies like this that you could also argue the toss over as to whether it helps or hinders. So that's one of the things. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. But does it mean that you have to prepare your army or build your army less and sort of prepare for the ultimate swings and therefore decrease the balance of your army? So, you know, if you have a big hitter like Azog or Sauron or whatever, you can veto scenarios where it might be helpful or hinder it. You know, that sort of stuff. Anyway, I won't go into too much because you'll probably say it better than I will if you're emailing in. But the other thing I've sort of flagged up, and I don't know whether it's really a big issue or not, but it's certainly intriguing to, I thought I'd bring it up, is that essentially, if you're playing veto, and you're playing one game on one table, and another opponent is playing a different game on the next table, that you're not playing the same game, so the VPs that you score are much less sort of varied. Well, they're much more varied. So, for example, if you are both playing Storm the Camp, there's a very good chance everyone's going to get six all draws. Whereas if one of you's playing Contest of Champions and the other's playing Storm the Camp, because the scenarios are so different, it can really decrease. I know that's unlikely in most veto systems because most use pools, but it doesn't matter. You can still end up with quite a quite a variety of scores, and through no fault of your own, it's very hard to get a 12-0 in Storm the Camp, but it is quite easy to get a 12-0 in Contest of Champions, or to use a more sort of obvious comparison, To the Death and Contest. So, you know, those are the contest is much more likely to be swingy, and so on. And the same with, I don't know, Heirlooms compared with Command the Battlefield or hold ground. These things are, and I think that could skew a tournament. You know, you have no choice in the matter other than you have to veto one thing, but someone else could easily get a 12-0 based on the scenario against exactly the same player when you've played really well and you've still only got a 6-3, or I don't know. But anyway, so those are the things that I sort of think, and I think there's a potential here for veto actually becoming a de facto thing that everyone at competitive tournaments uses. But it might not be the best choice. Maybe. I don't know. This is why we ask these questions. So I've certainly spoken to some of the Middle-earth team about this, and they don't like it. I mean, obviously, it's not in the book, so I suppose they wouldn't want to encourage people to use something that isn't in the book. But they've sort of mentioned the it reduces the balance of the scenarios being a sort of factor in terms of affecting people's army writing credentials, because they, you know, encourages you to say, I don't know, worry about that 1 in 12 scenario or something like that that could be a real dampener on your, I don't know, Galadriel's time if you're in Contest of Champions, stuff like that. So really interesting. So let me know what you think on this, because I'm really keen to know, do you think veto is a good thing for the game? Get in touch now, entmootpodcast@gmail.com. That's entmootpodcast@gmail.com if you have any comments on veto as a system. I'm going to be using it, I think it's going to be in the next two tournaments I go to. So the Yorkshire-Lincolnshire one I mentioned is going to have veto. And that was, I think, so that people can bring like big silly heroes and it not completely ruin their days. But also the other part of the slow grow will have it as well. So let me know, entmootpodcast@gmail.com. What do you think of the veto system? Right, well, that's it for now. Until next time.